Good morning, and welcome to the CyberSmart Morning News Update. With the always evolving world of cyber threats and defense, you need a source you can trust. FBI retired Special Agent Darren Mott guides you through today's intricate cyber landscape and brings you the latest headlines and insights and what it means to you. Let's dive into today's cyber news.
Good morning, friends. Wednesday, March 13th, 2024. This is the CyberSmart Morning News Update. I'm your host, retired FBI Supervisory Special Agent Darren Mott. This is Deep Dive Wednesday, so I have four stories, three of them kind of interrelated somewhat and somewhat not, but you'll see how I get there when I get there. And one other one just on a simple current vulnerability that a lot of companies need to pay attention to and get targeted with. But first things first, obviously, as you're aware, the podcast format has changed now Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And so what I'm doing in the meantime is on my LinkedIn page and on my X page or Twitter page, I am posting 2-3 minute videos on news items that occur during the day that just kind of pop up and are of interest. And so if you follow me on LinkedIn, you can see those there. They're on my main feed and they're also on, I started a CyberSmart Morning News Update group page on LinkedIn that anybody is welcome to join if they're so inclined. It's not hard to find. On Twitter, it's the Cyber Guy, C-Y-B-U-R guy. It's not that hard. You can find it. If you have a problem, email me, Darren@thecyberguy.com. I'll help you get to either one of those spots. So let's get right into it here. The first one is from Dark Reading, Nate Nelson reporting, Magnet Goblin exploits Evante one-day bug in mere hours. So I'm mentioning this because this is like, this is the 2024 MOVEit problem, these Evante devices and their vulnerabilities. Ask CISA how they feel about that. But while threat actors converged on Evante Edge devices earlier this year, one of them moved quicker than the rest, deploying a one-day exploit the day after its public disclosure. That's why it's called a one-day. It's the day after it's exposed. If it's 0 day, it's not exposed yet. Okay. One of the five vulnerabilities that came up in light in recent months, CVE-2024-21887, stood out. The command injection vulnerability in Evante Connect Secure and Policy Secure Gateways was rated a critical 9.1 out of 10 on the CVSS scale. It has since proven a powerful launch pad for malicious developers. And why does this still work? Because people aren't updating and patching their systems. But okay. Magnet Goblin, recently named in a Checkpoint Research blog post, was one of the fastest to capitalize on the potential. Within a day after the release of the proof of concept exploit, the group had malware in hand capable of exploiting. This kind of shows why bad guys are constantly winning, because they are on top of these things quicker than blue teamers or defenders are. So, quote, it's pretty quick, admits Sergey Shekovich, threat intelligence group manager at TechPoint. More to the point, it showed that they have some kind of an ongoing process for how to do it. That is not the first time they're exploiting public-facing services. So what to know about Magnet Goblin? For some time now, the previously unnamed Magnet Goblin has been exploiting one days in public-facing services, including the e-commerce platform Magento, the data analytical service ClickSense, and Apache ActiveMQ. If it compromises a vulnerability in a device running Windows, Magnet Goblin often deploys a remote monitoring and management tool, such as ConnectWise, ScreenPoint, or AnyDesk, that gives them remote access to those devices. These malware examples have a better than average chance of flying under the radar, not so much because of their inherent sophistication, but because they're usually deployed against edge devices. That, and Sykovich says, because they are focusing on Linux. More publications put more focus on Windows. Also, there are currently better defense capabilities for Windows. So edge devices generally run some version of a Linux OS, and so obviously it's harder to monitor and clearly having certainly having problems because of the number of entities being targeted and hit with these Evante vulnerabilities, asked CISA. What to do since it's too late to just patch. This is from the article. It isn't just Magnet Goblin. Other major threat actors like the Raspberry Robin ransomware group have been whipping up one-day exploits at rates never before seen. For that reason, Shekovich advises, the main thing to do is patch as quickly as possible. Patch, patch, patch. Although he adds, I hope companies have already patched. This recommendation is not really relevant because if they haven't already, statistically, someone has exploited them in these past 2 months. So if you have an Evante Edge device and you have not patched it, chances are it's compromised because these things speak out to the internet and you can find them and then you can go compromise them. So ideally, companies are looking, you better be looking to do that or remove the Evante ones altogether. This, again, this is going to be an ongoing issue for the probably next 3 to 4 months is compromises against these particular edge devices. And again, if you're a small company and you're using a device, you know, you need help, find help to help you figure out how to do this and secure your systems. All right, the next three things kind of have to do with data and data privacy and stuff like that. First one is from cybernews.com, Gintaras Radauskas reporting. It says, people are increasingly concerned about personal data safety. Well, that's good, but we'll see. Most consumers are willing to switch to products that offer better data protection technology, but the problem is that Gen Z, the future, doesn't care about data privacy as much as other generations. In its latest research report, Data Privacy in 2024, Bringing Zero Knowledge to the Masses, Alio, a privacy-preserving blockchain platform, cites data showing that people are increasingly worried about who controls their personal data. I'll have thoughts on that in a minute. According to the survey conducted in October 2023 in the United States, 67% of consumers are willing to switch to a product if it includes a data protection technology option. People want to protect their privacy from data brokers and large technology companies, highlighting the need for consumers to have choices. What's more, it looks like the privacy limitations of digital services are widely recognized now, and this is thanks to a growing amount of reports of various data safety-related incidents. The growing awareness of potential digital risk is prompting even those who are content with their current setups to seek out alternatives that offer enhanced protection, says Alio. While the media covering data breaches, leaks, hacks, scams, and ransomware more extensively than ever, these risks are top of mind for the public. And I wonder, are they really? Because we still give out way too much information all the time. I think it's a wise thing for people to say, yes, I'm concerned about my privacy, but whether they actually do it or not is another thing. Are they using long passwords? Are they deploying multi-factor authentication? Things like that. More from the article. It's not just the news, though. Alio explains that data security and the understanding of it also improve because of mass advertising for digital products. For instance, CrowdStrike bought a Super Bowl commercial for two years in a row. I guarantee you that did nothing for people to understand cybersecurity, honestly. But okay, you do you. Americans are additionally increasingly aware of global privacy laws like the European Union's general data protection regulation. Are they really? Go down the street, ask 10 people what EU's GDPR are and see if they know. I guarantee you they do not. But I mean, it's nice to think that maybe that's the case. So simply put, privacy has gone from something users hope for to something they demand. Few adults have a laissez-faire attitude towards data privacy. Most are concerned about how their data is used, despite feeling that they have less control. I'm not sure I exactly agree with all of this because the data doesn't show that, I don't think. But again, I'm not doing a survey, so maybe I'm wrong, but what's your thoughts? Feel free to email me, Darren@thecyberguy.com. Along with that, Stanford data of 27,000 people stolen in September ransomware attack. Now, the fact is only 27,000, I guess, is good news for Stanford. This is from bleepingcomputer.com, Sergey Gatlin reporting. Stanford University says the personal information of 27,000 individuals was stolen in a ransomware attack impacting its Department of Public Safety network. So it's a smaller network. That's why only 27,000 people. The university discovered the attack on September 27th, disclosed it 1 month later that it was investigating and disclosed 1 month later, rather, that it was investigating a, you bet, cybersecurity incident. In an update published on Monday, only 5 months later, Stanford said the attackers didn't gain access to other systems outside of the Department of Public Safety's network. Here's hoping. The investigation determined that an unauthorized individual gained access to the Department of Public Safety's network between May 12th, 2023 and September 27th, 2023. Well, that is some good dwell time right there. According to data breach notifications filed with Maine's Attorney General, the attackers stole documents containing personally identifiable information belonging to 27 individuals. So I have a question. Maybe someone can answer this for me because I just don't know, and I guess I could look it up. But it seems like all of these entities are filing notifications with Maine's Attorney General. What is the deal with there? Does Maine have the most stringent data breach notification? So if you have a user who's or somebody's information from Maine that you have to file, I don't understand that. I mean, why wouldn't California report it? That's I'm curious as to why that's the case. But okay, anyway, more from the article. The personal information that may have been affected varies from person to person, but could include date of birth, social security number, government ID, passport number, driver's license number, and other information. Basically, stuff these guys probably already had because your information has probably been breached before. But okay, for a small number of individuals, this information may also have included biometric data, health, medical information, email addresses with passwords, username with password, security questions with answers, digital security, and credit card information. I would, at this point, assume that they all had that, but okay, if you want to say a small number, sure. While Stanford has not attributed the September incident to a specific ransomware operation, the Akira ransomware gang claimed the attack in October, saying they stole 430 gigabytes of files from the university systems. That's a lot more than just 27,000 people's pieces of information, but Okie dokie. Stanford disclosed another data breach in February 2023 after the Department of Economics PhD program admission information was exposed online between December 2022 and January 2023. So I would say if you are in Stanford, maybe go to your cybersecurity or computer science department, see if they can help you secure your systems. That might be a good plan. And along those lines, as we talk about universities being compromised, one of the other big areas besides healthcare that is being hit a lot are school districts. And why is that the case? Well, NPR may have our answer. This is Kavitha Cardoza reporting. Hackers are targeting a surprising group of people, young public school students. And I give a hat tip to Dave Bacon, who I work with for this. He passed this along to me. So this is his credit for identifying this article, but I thought it was interesting. When Celeste Gravatt first heard about a data breach in her kid's school system in February 2023, it sounded innocuous. I didn't really think anything of it at first, she said. Officials at Minneapolis Public Schools called it a system incident, then technical difficulties, and finally an encryption event. Just say what it is. Come on, it's not hard, but okay. Gravatt has two children who have already graduated from Minneapolis schools and one who is currently in middle school. She says it was only when she checked social media that she realized the true extent of the attack and what it could mean for her kids. Minneapolis public schools have been hit by what experts describe as one of the most devastating cyber attacks ever. Hackers stole district data, including files where children were identifiable, and then demanded the district pay a ransom for it. When the district officials refused, the hackers released the data online. It included social security numbers, school security details, and information about sexual assaults and psychiatric holds. That's not good at all. Minneapolis Public Schools did not make any officials available for an interview. Why would you? In a written statement, the district said it had sent written notice of the attack to more than 105,000 people who may have been impacted by it. Quote, the breach was actually really huge, Gravatt says, and it wasn't just school records. It was health records. It was all sorts of things that should be privileged information that are now just out there floating around for anyone to buy. It's an example of the growing nationwide trend in which hackers are targeting a surprising group of people, young public school students. So why do they do that, you wonder? Well, we'll get to that. As school districts depend more on technology, cyber attacks against those systems and sensitive data they store are on the rise. While it's hard to know exactly how many K-12 school systems have been targeted by hackers, it's quite a bit. An analysis by the cyber firm MCSoft found 45 districts reported that they were attacked in 2022. In 2023, that number more than doubled to 108. The consequences of these data breaches can follow students well into adulthood. School system data, which can include discipline information, special education records, medical histories, and more, can be held hostage, with hackers threatening to release sensitive information if districts don't pay a ransom, as they did in Minneapolis. The data can also be used to steal a child's identity. That's a big one, right? Because these kids don't really have much in the way of online credit scores and stuff like that. So as it turns out, the identity information of children is actually more valuable to them than that of adults, says Doug Levine, director of K-12 Security Information Exchange, a nonprofit that helps protect school districts from cybersecurity risks. He says stealing a child's identity may seem counterintuitive because they don't have resources of their own, but it can cause a lot of havoc. Parents don't necessarily monitor their children's credit, and bad actors can easily open up bank accounts, rack up debt, and apply for loan in a child's name. As a result, cyber criminals can abuse the credit records of minors for many, many years before the victim even learns about it. And that's the big thing about that. There's a misconception that only sensitive data school have are Johnny and Susie's algebra grades, Levin says. It's actually so much more. Districts have data on everything from a child's allergies and suspensions to household income and court orders. School system educators can be a little bit like pack rats, Levine said. And so there's a lot of information that's collected over time, and it's often not deleted when no longer necessary. So this is an important thing for school districts to understand, that they have information that is very valuable to bad guys. And I'll tell you, we talk about healthcare being underprepared for cyber incidents or cyber attacks. Schools probably even worse so. They don't have large IT departments. They certainly don't have a cybersecurity group. And I mean, we've seen incidents over the last several years where the eighth largest school district in the country, Osceola Public Schools in Florida, had a ransomware attack, and chances are there was information lost there. And so this is really, really a big problem. Now, how do you protect yourself as a parent? That's a damn good question, because you have to give this information to the school districts. I guess you could do civil lawsuits against the school, but I don't know if that would necessarily work. But, you know, it's going to be a problem, right? This is not a problem that's going to be solved anytime soon. I know that Doug Levin's group, the K-12 Cybersecurity Exchange, Information Exchange, is a really good organization that's trying to help schools. But honestly, schools have got to want to be helped. And hopefully some of them read this article and say, okay, maybe we need to get on the bandwagon here and figure out how to protect our own stuff, because they're coming for you, schools. If you don't, you may not think so, but they are. They don't care how big you are, how small you are, where you are. They're going to steal that information and they're going to use it for a whole host of a lot of bad things. So this is, again, a call out to schools. Find someone to help you. There are certainly resources that you can utilize to help you start down the road of cyber protection, but find someone to at least consult on how to protect your information. Now, the interesting thing that's missing here that I'd love to see is how'd they get in, right? So we talk about this incident, what happened, all this data stolen, but how did they get in? This article doesn't mention that. Chances are there wasn't much of a postmortem. My guess is someone clicked a link they weren't supposed to, but I mean, think about school networks. They are wide open. You have giving kids Chromebooks and all that kind of stuff, and you can only lock them down to a certain point. The kids are going to be smarter than the adults running the cybersecurity show in some cases. And so they're going to get around ways that the school has put in place to protect their data. But, I guarantee you, I will be having conversations on this podcast in the very near future about some other school district that got compromised, hit, and bad things happen. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Cyber Smart Morning News Updates. As always, I thank you for taking the time to listen, download, wherever that is. If you are listening and you find value, please subscribe to the podcast. That helps the algorithmic podcast gods to do whatever it is that they do. And it helps me to keep on going. We'll be back again Friday with Op-Ed Friday and a couple of new stories as well. Again, you can find me on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/IN/DarrenMott. Find me on X at The Cyber Guy, or check out my Substack, cyberguy.substack.com. And as always, you can always email me, darren@thecyberguy.com. I love to answer questions. If you have questions about how to get in the FBI, like if you have a kid who wants to get in the FBI, I can help you with that too. Don't talk about that a lot here. It's not really the purpose, but I can certainly do that. Spending 20 years in the FBI, I kind of know how to go around that. As always, as you go through your day, know that knowledge is protection. If you can understand the threats targeting you, you can assess your risk, proceed wisely. Thanks again for listening. We will see you again on Friday.
Cyber Smart Morning News is written and produced by Cyber Guy Productions. Feel free to email thoughts, comments, or suggestions to darren@thecyberguy.com or follow Darren on LinkedIn at linkedin.com/in/DarrettMott. Thanks for listening.